With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The podcast.
Thank you.
Yeah. How are you?
Oh, good, man.
Yeah,
we starting?
Man. Yeah, that was the intro. That's the new intro.
I always say good. I think everyone does.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm all right.
You're all right.
Yeah. I wouldn't say I'm good. I'm all right. What about you?
I'm great.
Yeah. You've had a Wi-Fi guy around your house. You've been flirting with him all day.
Yeah, my Wi-Fi is stronger than ever, boy.
Yeah, well.
Well, as strong as it can be in a new build.
Yeah, depending on your provider. Yeah.
I like your cap, man. Getting it back into
Dunhill.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Massive into expensive pens.
Yeah. I'm actually into Rothmans hoodies.
Yeah. Yeah. Although some people wear a lot of Marlboro clothing.
Yeah. 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 That's true. They're the sort of people that wear like a Piaggio leather jacket.
Yeah.
And Ferrari trainers.
Oh, I've got a joke leather jacket in here. Shall I get it?
Quickly? Yeah. Get it. Yeah. No one can see it, but...
It's not mine.
Oh, okay. Let's see it.
I might wear it for the whole podcast.
Yeah. Oh, wait. That's kind of hard. BMW Castrol leather jacket. It's white and blue and quite tight. Yeah. Where'd you get that from?
It's my girl's mum's old motorbike jacket.
Wow. She's a biker?
Apparently so, yeah.
Nice. You kind of look like...
It's quite rigid, though.
You look like Neutrino in the 90s.
Maybe I can wear it to a Corrupt FM thing.
Yeah, that'd be sick. Yeah,
but
yeah.
You're going to have to take that off, mate.
Wait, that's Why? Hard. Yeah, yeah, that's
BMWs, cars, that's my sort of thing, isn't
it? My sort of thing, yeah. I'll tell you someone that does wear leather jackets in some of his roles.
Oh, go on.
It's today's guest.
Oh,
yeah.
Good.
Today's guest is someone very special. Someone who started their journey on the big screen through the medium of high-grade lyrical capabilities.
Rap.
Exactly. He started out as a rapper.
Yeah.
Someone who started from humble beginnings and took his talent to Hollywood, inspiring a nation, showing that anything is possible to some people. If I was to say to you, ill manners, you'd say...
Plan B.
But it's not Plan B. And if I was to say to you, the Sweeney, you'd say...
UK TV gold, sort of.
Yeah, no, the newer one.
Okay.
Film. If I was to say to you Game of Thrones, you'd say...
Oh, dragons.
If I was to say to you Deadpool, you'd say...
Oh,
quicker.
Blood everywhere.
Exactly. If I was to say to you gorgeous fucking bastard with chiseled features, you'd say...
I know exactly who you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's the rapper, the actor, the writer, the director, the freelance martial arts enthusiast, man like Ed Skrein. Should we start the podcast?
Yeah.
Yeah. This is nothing more than an intro.
What's happening?
There he is.
Hey.
But you lot got the proper professional setup. And I'm at here.
Yeah.
Yes. Oi, and the t-shirt's hard. I got the white one.
Oh, man. You know what? It's the hoodie is what I really wanted. But I don't need any more hoodies, man. I'm still... It's even got my Corrupt FM ones, lads.
Yeah.
Hey. What's going on with these earbuds? Sorry, fellas.
Yo, can you hear us?
I've now lost you. I can't hear you.
Let me try something quick here.
Sometimes Hugo's Wi-Fi fucks with everyone.
Is that right? I blame you.
Yeah,
just blame me. Fine.
All right, wicked.
Blame me for anything. I mean,
yeah, yeah.
That's my life.
Where do I start, man? That was you as well, was it?
Yeah. Anytime you're in trouble, drama, just say it's my fault.
Yeah, all right, good. At least I got someone to blame now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got all the Lehane hoodies. All right. I bought all of them and I'm not sharing.
Hey, what are you saying though, man? How are you?
I'm all right, bruv. I'm all right. I don't know where to start, man. It's everything's a bit mad, isn't it? It's difficult to answer that question. It's a funny time even ask someone, how are you? It's like, bruv, I'm alive.
Yeah.
Counting my blessings. I'm cautiously optimistic about the future, but at the same time, it's like, it is what it is, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think we've had to learn to like roll with the punches and you just never know at the moment. But are you, what part of the world are you in? You're at home?
Okay,
yeah.
I'm in Clapton.
Down the road for me, isn't it?
Yeah. So, yeah, man, I've been here for the whole duration.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is a blessing, you know what I mean? To have the marshes, to have all of the greenery, spaces that we've got. It is what it is, man. I mean, yeah, just so many phases and stages to this shit, innit?
What about work-wise? Have you been on a break sort of thing, or have you been still been doing little bits and bobs?
What was really interesting, I would say, is when it first happened, you know, from like March 19th, 20th or whatever it was last year, not even because of COVID, that basically serendipitously coincided with two big kind of fuckeries happening outside of, family, just stuff, you know, people dying and just shit like that.
Right, yeah.
So I was not for six from March. I was just in straight up protection mode, survival mode. And I got like 6 weeks into it and I thought to myself, oh my God, I haven't even thought about anything creative for about 2 months or something. I thought, hang on a minute. When was the last time in my life that I didn't think anything creative, whether it's music, writing, acting, directing, painting, anything, you know? I was like, I didn't have the capacity to do that. It was just basically just holding down a kind of paternal position to protect the people around me and to try and look after people, be strong enough for them, but was like broken myself. So it was like, it was a tough time. But anyway, all that to say, that kind of made me realize that, should I be being creative? Like, is, you know, that whole guilt thing that I think a lot of people felt last year, you know what I mean? I didn't learn Mandarin. I weren't baking sourdough, you know? I didn't write that script. I didn't write the feature, you know what I mean? Or the memoirs. And they would have been fucking bleak if I did write them. But yeah, like after that, it started, you know, sparking me off a little bit. And then I got to like the summer and I was like, you know, obviously like the numbers, things, the world started seeming like it wasn't going to end. And so I was able to start being more creative. And from the summer, I started picking up projects. And I've been directing. The only work I've done over this whole period has been directing. I've done three projects, which I actually can't. I was thinking, I can't really say anything about them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It always sounds good as well. I've been working on a few things I can't talk about.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's the one, was that your debut, the short film that you dropped?
Yeah, Little River Run.
Yeah, as a director.
Yeah.
That's incredible, man. Yeah. How was it?
Thank you, bro.
I mean, it's such a whole different thing to acting. And like, I guess in a good way, you've got all the control yourself. But like, in another way, you've got so much, that's all pressure on you sort of thing. Yeah, pressure. Like, how was that?
Yeah, it's very different, huh? Very, very different, man. I suppose I went from being like the pretty maitre d' in front of the house, just having banter with people.
Exactly.
And then just going home
to
like being the owner and just looking at the balance books going, fuck, you know, I'm going to do this, having to sack people and all that.
It was
an eye-opener. I mean, I remember I finished it and we shot for 3 days in Eastern North London. Mm-hmm. And when I got to the end of it, I said to my missus, I'm more tired from that 3 days than I've ever been from any shoot I've ever done. And I've obviously done like 4 month shoots that were mad physical, all this stuff.
Yeah.
And it's nothing compared to directing, because it's the
amount of things you have to think about.
It's the fucking thinking. You don't get to go and sit and have a coffee. You know, what I love about being on set life is like messing around, chatting, banter with the runners, with the makeup artists, with the camera operators, like, you know, and just like getting to know people, clicking and all of that. But, you know, there's very little time for that. Saying that, the reason I did Little River Run was, first of all, because I just kind of had a creative urge to do it, and it was inspired by another person dying, which is kind of bleak and all that, but is the reality. Misery is a muse, as they say, and maybe even if it weren't misery, you know, intense emotions are certainly a muse. So I was like, I had this urge to do it, and I was like, let me try it, because I want to know if I enjoy it, which has always been the kind of selfish drive through all of my creative work. I do it for me, man.
Yeah,
I'm not
doing
this for anyone else.
But that's the best way to do it, because then you put your all into it, and then it is for everyone else. Do you know what I mean? You'll only care about it if it's something you enjoy. Do you know what I mean? And then that reflects on the work, and it's the, I feel like it's the best way.
I feel like it's like we're in an economy of emotions, whether we're painting, whether we're producing, whether we're spitting, whether we're acting, whatever. It's an economy of emotions. So it's about conveying emotions. It's like, you know, when you hear a Getz verse, Koji Radical, something like that, or you know, when you see a Basquiat painting or certain things, it's like it will make you feel so much because they felt so much.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah. So it has to be about them. And it's like, I don't have to be, you know, I don't have to even have to relate to what Getz is saying to feel his truth.
Yeah.
It feels true and it feels honest. So so it was like, one, do I enjoy it? And two, am I even half good at it? And it was just not shit. And basically I come out the other end of it and I was like, yeah, I'm not shit. And I fucking loved it.
Sick.
So then from there, it's just been about consolidating. And, you know, when I'm on set, I'm like, fuck, man, this is nuts. Like, I've been getting the maddest training for this. Like, I've been a part of so many sets and been on the front line of so many sets, from little Danish movies to big American ones to this, to that, and the other. That it's like, I'm like, rah. That was an incredible education. I was so lucky. I didn't really realize at the time I was learning what I was learning.
Soaking it up.
And it's coming in handy now.
Yeah.
And there's a lot to learn, but I'm on the path now. And this is the other flex and hustle for the next 10
years
or whatever.
Yeah.
This is the wave now. Yeah.
It's quote cast. Yeah. This is the wave.
Yeah, that's hard, man. And I suppose learning on the job, soaking it all in, even subconsciously, and then starting with like a short film as well, so you know you can put your all into it as well, is all part of the training ground, really, isn't it?
Yeah, man. And also, it's like, if I think about like my last five movies, I was playing a fucking guy from New Orleans. I was playing a guy from Staten Island. I was playing a fucking guy with horns and wings from fucking there. And I was playing a New Jersey pilot from 1940s. You know what I love about that is I get to travel internally and I get to like go to all these places. However, this is not what's sympathetic to the life and the emotions and the stories that I know growing up. My community is not reflected in these works.
I'm not from that world.
So it makes, you know, the wonderful thing like about being an actor is you get to learn more about yourself by being these other people. But I want to explore. I want to tell our stories, you know, which is what I love so much about what you lot did. Is like, I was like, that's my story, you know. You lot are literally the Kappa jacket. Like, Steve's dressed like my mate Ahmed, you know. And it's like, the annoying thing is, my mates are like, yeah, if that was us, you'd be MC Grindr. I'm like, okay, cool.
You know what's mad is I was working with Ben Plan B, our mate Ben. And he was telling me about ill manners and about you, actually. And because he had
at the time.
And at the time he had like a idea.
When was this you were working with him? Before we did Ill Manners?
No, it was after. It was like probably about 4 or 5 years ago. And And I didn't tell him this, but I then went home and watched Ill Manners. And it's fucking amazing. And I just couldn't believe that it was all real and like, you know, that he encouraged people where he's from to trust in him, and he trusted in you guys, and I proper rated that about him. And he obviously had an eye, and he does have an eye for talent, and you're definitely someone that he spotted, that he knew amazingly talented and pushed.
That's really important, man. Yeah.
Yeah.
That trust thing is beautiful, isn't it? You know, it's such a scary thing to enter a new medium. And it's such a scary thing to do fucking anything.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, definitely.
I know everyone look at you look like you're all mad confident and that, but I know you lot will be bricking it and having imposter syndrome and all that.
Oh, man.
Left, right, and center. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm winging it now.
Yeah,
100%.
Now. Yeah. Literally. Still feeling like, yeah, but they were wrong with their compliments, weren't they?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. If you really knew how shit I was.
You saw me.
Yeah.
You should see the rushes that got cut, you know.
Yeah, I was petrified, man.
But the trust thing is beautiful, you know? And it's like, what you just said is that Ben kind of got us trusting him. Yeah, it's like, we did trust him. You know, things just worked out so perfectly. There's like, you know, me and Ben met when he was like 15, community studio in Camden with like Faith SFX.
Oh, sick.
Yeah,
Lady
Nye.
Yeah.
True Tiger, startup gang.
Yeah, there was enough people. Amir from Rudimental. Enough people was knocking about that studio. And he just had this clarity and this insight that I just didn't have. You know what I mean? I was just a loose cannon. I was nuts. I was on autopilot. My autopilot was able to get me into rooms and stuff.
Mm.
I couldn't hold stuff down. I had no like oversight and overview and understanding of the situations that I was in that I completely have now. It's come with age and fatherhood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just didn't have that. Ben was born with that. Ben was a fucking teenager. We was there at 15. He's going, nah, this is what we're going to do. I'm going to do it. And I've written this fucking script. And I'm thinking, you're nuts, bro. Like, who are we? We're just shitheads from fucking Northeast London.
Yeah.
Like, what do you mean you wrote a script? Like, first of all, it's amazing you even wrote it. How does one even write a script?
People don't write scripts.
You know?
Bruv, I always say this as well. When me and Hugo, like, sorry to interrupt, we had these characters that were just voices, you know, like when you used to fuck around, right? And we told Steve about these voices, and he was like, yeah, maybe we write something and we film it. And same thing, I was like, in my mind, first thing I thought was, no one actually does anything.
People don't that they write talk about. And film people don't shit, do you mad,
like, how do you even get, yeah, exactly that. How the Grow fuck would you even Steve. Do that? Yeah.
I know, it's like a naive dreamer, you know, be realistic and you know, I'm off to go and work at like the local leisure center or whatever, which was my life, you know what I mean?
Right.
So he was like this, had this drive that was this personality that we all could buy into and believed in. And he was incredibly talented, you know. But then what happened was he kind of blew up. So he was the first one of us to blow up. So we also had this kind of aspirational thing. It's like we always had this notion that like, oh, I'm going to blow, whatever that means. I'm going to make it, whatever that means. But now we actually had a blueprint for that. Because Ben was like, we were there, you know, all of his shit. I was the faceless person behind him, with him there backstage, just, you know, doing whatever, messing around. And, you know, Glastonbury main stage and all that, just the anonymous guys in the back. So it was amazing to watch him go through that. But what it meant is like, first of all, he got the clout that we could get the money to make that movie. And when I say money, 150 grand.
Yeah.
That's how much we shot Ill Manners for.
That's mad. Then
we went to the edit and it was a fucking shit show. So Strickland Banks blew up. So then we're able to get to double our money and get another 150 grand, right?
Yeah.
Which we were like, oh my, another 150
yeah,
grand.
Yeah.
And then the next year, in 2010, we went back, we shot the reshoots. And so Ben had this platform, which meant that when it came out, all of his like notions of kind of social philanthropy and such and what he wanted to do with the charity, Each One Teach One and everything, many had a platform for it. So it meant that not only were we able to be Grizzle and to be ourselves and to be proper us in the same way that you lot are us, yeah, we were able to be us, that we could rock all of our, we wearing all of our normal clothes, who's talking, you know, halfway through, I remember someone going, do you think we're saying bruv too much? And it's like, I know, bruv, but let's just carry, you know what I mean? It's like, we were able to represent us, but Ben had put this kind of like, somehow been able to make it feel kind of conscious, you know, have this conscious message because he's a deep thinker. And then, you know, when it came out in The Guardian, Edwina Curry was saying that they should show this in the House of Lords.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. And you know, there was all of this kind of talk and we were like, this is nuts. You know what I mean? I was actually, I was in my son's bedroom today reading him some Biff and Chip and Kipper for all the dads out there.
Yeah. How old's your son?
I got three kids, actually. I got a 10-year-old, 3-year-old and a newborn, essentially.
Oh, wow. You're a busy man.
Lockdown, baby.
Potent,
yeah, I'm busy.
Very potent young man.
I have one and I'm knackered.
Yeah, trust me. Trust me, bruv. Yeah, it's a lot. And I see a photo of my missus and her sister at the Ill Manners premiere. And I was like, wow, that's nuts. And then I thought to myself, that was in Empire Leicester Square. That was the end of like big premieres, you know, in those eras. And when we turned up, it was a big premiere. It was my first ever film, my first ever premiere. Right. And there was so many people. And since then, I've done big movies that have had much smaller premieres.
Well, yeah, that's mad. Because and a film for that budget and that level.
Yeah,
these days,
it was Benno.
That's it. Yeah.
He's marketable. He was making, you know, at that time, people was paying him to, he was going off on jets to Germany to do talk show music, you know, PAs and that. And so he was big, man. At the same time, we was, you know, when we was at Glastonbury, he was the second last person on the main stage behind Beyonce.
Yeah. Crazy. Yeah. You know,
It was nuts. It, those times were surreal to look back on, amazing to look back on. You know what I mean? Make us sound like old rockers. You know what I mean? Oh, that was good. Yeah. You know? But it was amazing. Ill Manners was like beautiful. And the other thing you said is like basically alluding that, I'm like one of his like proteges or whatever. 100%, bro. I would not even have tried acting. I wouldn't even have tried it. I literally wouldn't have tried. I mean, maybe who knows how life works out.
I know, but it's crazy because that was.
I believe I wouldn't have, man. Yeah. I just wouldn't have.
He installed mad confidence in me, like from this show. He was, you know, at the time, I don't think it ever got made to anything, but he was like, I've got this idea. I've got the rights for it. I want you to be this person in it. And I was like, are you sure? And he was like, yeah, 100%. Because I'd spent a bit of time with him and I feel like we bonded, we'd fallen out. And then
you lipsed him and it was all
right. Yeah, yeah. Not falling out badly.
Always just forgotten.
He never says when it's time to go home.
He always stays too long. That song is really us.
Yeah.
It's funny to kind of think back about Ill Manners and just think it's probably still my favourite project I've ever done, except for my short film. Into like, probably my favourite. Why is that then? Then we come back to this whole notion of like, that's my community.
Yeah.
These are my stories. These are my people. I always feel like, you know, we made Ill Manners as a reaction to the Cockney movies and the Hood movies. Because we were like, where's us in this? Yeah. We're in the middle of all this. Yeah. You know what I mean? We're not fucking wearing brand coats, walking around, going, doing the lock stock thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, you know, the gangs in the Hood movies, they're all black people. And it's like, hang on a minute, what is this like? This is like, you know, this isn't what we see and what we live. So to show that kind of multicultural, the grey areas and, you know, the nuance and to really show London and to be unapologetic, you know, with the speech is another thing I wanted to do with Little River Run is like not pander to having to be even legible in a sense, you know. Yeah. My Spanish friends that speak really good English are like, I can't understand a fucking word of this. I'm like, yeah.
That's how
it is. It's slang.
Yeah.
Even my mum probably might not understand all of it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I like that because when it's personal shit, right now, as a director, all I want to do is make personal shit. As an actor, again, it's like, I do want to go off and be these New Jersey 1970s cops and whatever. Mm-hmm. But kind of more than anything, I want to rep the ends. And yeah, I haven't been able to use my normal accent since Ill Manners, basically.
You know what I mean? Wow, that's interesting. Yeah.
Getting sticks of really American.
But that is the reason, I'm not taking away from all the amazing things you've done, obviously, like amazing experiences, you told amazing stories. That's also part of the reason that you've done all these big things and now you've got a platform to be able to tell your story. You know what I mean? Which is sick.
Precisely. And it's learning. It's like if I was only making, let's say, community film in the ends or whatever, even if it was at a high production value and such, I wouldn't have learned everything that I've learned. I've had to go off and learn, work with A-level, B-level, C-level crews. Mm-hmm. Not literally A-levels, but it felt like it sometimes.
Your little college dramas.
Yeah. It felt like it sometimes.
Press the red button.
You know what I mean? Oh, can you do that again? We didn't press the button. So, you know, that experience has, I know, I had to go around the world to come back. You know, when you go on holiday, you sit somewhere and you look at the sea and you think, I'm so fucking far from home. And you're like, everything seems so clear now. And it's like, you have to leave to come back.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
definitely. We literally thought of People Steal Nothing in Thailand. And I remember saying to my mum, I didn't know I was going to go find myself. I just said it as an excuse to my mum because she was like, you haven't got a job. You're not doing anything. You can't just fuck off and go away. And I was like, no, honestly, this is the last time. And this time I'm going to find myself and I'm going to sort everything out. Stop getting nicked, whatever. Come back.
She's rolling her eyes. Coming back with white dreadlocks and a fucking
Aladdin trousers.
Shit henna tattoos. Yeah, bro.
Yeah.
And are you looking like Jafar?
And I went out there with Steve and Hugo and come back and, you know, like Steve was traveling around the world. And when he finally came back, we ended up doing something. You know what I mean? It's like, there is some truth to that, isn't it? Yeah. Fuck off, mum.
I found myself. Yeah. Told ya.
Yeah.
I'm moving to Clapton and I'm being an actor. All right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Hey guys, it's Ron here. Coming back at you like Cleopatra. Trying out a new catchphrase. But yeah. I hope y'all guys enjoy the podcast. And remember, all the links will be down at the bottom. All the recos down at the bottom. And I hope y'all enjoy them. I'm just going to jump a little bit. So I want to get more into that and the crossover from rap into acting and stuff. But just before we get into that, throughout lockdown, obviously we've all been in a lot more on that. Have you got any recos for the people then? Anything you've been watching, listening to, reading?
Well, right now I'm lost in fucking medieval Japan in this amazing audio book called Shogun.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
Sick.
And it's fucking 53 hours, yeah? And my missus is like that. Are you listening to that fucking samurai thing again? And I'm sitting there with my earbuds on in the room, like, pausing it like that. Sorry, what'd you say? And then wait until do you mind if I just... I'm just gonna play it again. And then I go back again. So I'm like Mr. Unsociable because I'm just deep in medieval Japan. So Shogun is amazing. Black and British was a book I found really interesting. Mm-hmm. Send that on to my dad afterwards. He loved that as well. And then the classic last before Christmas, I read Sapiens, which I've just been meaning to for so long.
Yeah, you read that? Yeah, man. Yeah.
I thought it was really interesting.
Interesting, man.
It was. I mean, part of me was like, what are you doing? What fucking history? You left this behind years ago. You don't like this stuff.
But
I thought it was fascinating. I thought he had a really interesting tone. I've heard the guy I've heard some of his interviews, and he's an interesting human being. So yeah, he's got an interesting take on things. And I mean, what also was kind of perverse and interesting in that first 6 weeks when I said I wasn't feeling creative and I was kind of feeling overwhelmed. I couldn't watch any drama. I couldn't watch anything. I was like, all I could watch is like cooking programs, yeah. And I know you love your food and that, but I don't love cooking programs.
Yeah,
I don't watch cooking programs.
It's because
I've never watched them in my life.
Is it because you could be switched off then, and you're not like
100%.
Maybe if you're watching a drama because that's your work, it's like your brain's on still. Like,
yeah, I just think I couldn't. I had no. I didn't want to think about anything. Yeah. I didn't want to be invested in anything except for that Louisiana barbecue looks amazing, or you know, Bourdain in eating tacos in Tijuana or something.
But Bourdain is a G, man. Like Bourdain,
he's the G,
bro.
He's
my idol.
He's the G. Yeah. I went through and watched all the ones that I hadn't watched.
Yeah.
Of Parts Unknown.
Parts Unknown. Yeah, yeah. Amazing.
Yeah, and really started getting into like Jon Favreau's The Chef Show.
Yeah, yeah.
And Roy Choi and all that. Yeah, it's mad. Yeah. I can't even believe I'm saying it. I feel like a bit of a melt, but I love that.
I watch them too.
Yeah. But then I'd say like my main recommendation, which is like, it's not a recommendation at all because the whole world's been watching it. But what blew my mind, bro, and again, I can't believe I'm even saying this. I feel like a melt. But The Crown, bro, season 4.
Oh, bro, I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I haven't either.
Season 4.
No.
Listen,
the Diana one, yeah.
I'm gonna say like this.
My girl's watching it.
Can I ask that? Are they standalones each season?
I'm gonna say it like this, bro. I think I am diplomatically not the hugest supporter of the royal family.
Standard.
I'm not that interested in them.
Yes.
And sometimes it could even, you know, veer onto a kind of more negative feeling towards, you know, what they represent and such. Empire and history and such.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw this crown thing had been out for a couple of years. And I remember I was working in other countries and people were going like, oh, I love the crown. I was thinking, of course you love the crown. You think that's what we're all like over there. You love the queen, the thing. And I just thought, oh, it's for people from other countries that love the royal family.
That tourism.
Yeah. Then one of my friends who is like a fucking, who's one of us, a proper one of us. Yeah. He's a musician. And he was like, bro, you need to watch this. Like, he knows how wanky I get about cinematography and stuff. He's like, season four. He was like, I know what you think, but give it a try.
Right.
And so I just left season one to three and said, I'm going to watch this as a cinematography study, you know? Plus, I love Gillian Anderson and Olivia Colman.
Yeah,
so I was like, all right, these lot are enough. Wow. I mean, like, I found that the writing was so good, they played to an audience like me. It wasn't played necessarily for people that love the royals and are even interested in the slightest in the royals. And season four blew me away. And then I went back and I watched one to three and I was like, yeah. But season four is special. So I'll just say, as a filmmaker, give it a chance. Because some of the conversation, like when I watched, there was one scene with Gillian Anderson as Thatcher and Coleman as the Queen. I watched that. I said, that's the best rap battle I've ever seen. But it was like, it was nuts. It was so tense. And it was like the digs were all, it was so clever. It was like, it was amazing. It was like a great boxing match or something.
Yeah, so, that's hard.
Yeah, fucking cooking programs and the crown.
You've changed, bro. Now you've mentioned, now you said that, I'll give that a go, man. Because like you say, Olivia Colman, all these people and like, it's
my girl
good.
Was watching it, but I was like, I don't want to watch that.
I was literally, I was like, what's going on in my head? I was like, Prince Charles is like maybe my favorite character. I was like, what? No, I was just like, this is messing with my psyche. This is my identity. You know, I think this last year has made all of us look at our identities and say, okay, who am I really? Because now everything's been stripped away of what I thought I was. And now I have nothing. What is left?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
And it's like that happened. And then next thing you know, you start liking Prince Charles and you're on your way to a mental breakdown, bro.
I'll give that a go.
Yeah, no, shout out the crown. Your girl would love it if you got into it. Finally.
Yeah.
Oh, well, Ed tells you to watch it. Now you want to watch it? No, I always wanted to watch it.
I don't trust your judgment. You made me watch fucking Walking Dead and I gave that 2 episodes, all right?
these TV series, though, they're such a commitment that when people recommend them, I say, bro, I'm not watching that. What do you mean? There's 7 seasons of that. Even me, I just told you to, I'm asking you for 10 hours of your life.
Yeah, watch that.
It's like,
it's a long time, man.
It's a big ask. Yeah, man. The worst is when people go, I guess better after episode 3.
Yeah, I'm out.
Series 3, it picks up.
There's literally thousands more shows I could pick.
Yeah.
Well, just go back and rewatch The Sopranos again.
I did that first lockdown. Yeah.
So good, man. Oh. That episode where they're with the Russians in the snow and Paulie loses his shoe.
Best episode.
Yeah, yeah. One of my favorite episodes of
best
all time.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah, it was so good. With the guy, he won't die, in it.
Yeah. It's the so Russian guy. It's perfect, man. Yeah.
Yeah.
So good.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need.
Marketing wizards?
Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, yo! Yo! Ha ha! Ha 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 ha! Will everybody shut the fuck up?
Settle down, settle down!
You're in tune to the Chatting Shit Podcast.
UK stand up.
The world's greatest.
The best there ever was that ever lived.
Series 2 out now, motherfucker.
Oh gosh.
Ha ha.
Are you ready?
Check it. Check it.
Are you ready?
Check it. All right, let's take it back a little then. So where did it all start for you? It was like rap, right? Like, like being creative.
My creative thing started with Mark making a painting.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But that was like, no one ever saw that.
Yeah.
You know, except Miss Snowsill and my mum.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So.
Did you ever write?
Yeah.
Did you graph?
No, I would, every time I would be in my art class and I went art school and stuff, all they would do is say, oh yeah, you know, like graffiti, something like that. And I'm like, man, I ain't a real writer. My friends are out there bombing trains.
Yeah.
My friends are getting nicked for this. Like,
yeah,
I don't,
terrifying.
I'm not a grapher.
Yeah.
And I'm just not a grapher. I've never picked up a spray can in my life.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, my mark making style was that because of, you know, because of who I grew up around and where I grew up.
But, yeah.
But it was like, yeah, basically cut a long story short or make a long story longer. I painting and mark making was like the only thing I was good at in school. So I was like, yeah, this is all I'm good at. So I'm just going to pursue this. And like really my introduction to creativity and getting lost in creativity. And then I started finding UK hip hop when I was in like A-level, GCSEs, A-levels. I was going Fortismere with like, oh, Ruben Dangor, you know him. And,
yeah.
You know, in fact, he was spitting back then. Do you know
No
he was
way. No oh, wow. way. That's
oh
mad.
Mate, I will say
bro, we had him on the podcast as well. I wish I pulled him up on that, man.
He didn't say that.
Oh mate, I've got his old CDs. I sent him a picture. I found it in my basement, man.
That's
because
amazing.
He was younger to us. He was like only 2-3 years younger.
Right, okay.
But you know, that was a lot back then. But he was like, you know, they were our little younger crew in school. We all used to spit and beatbox and
okay,
and
so
all
you
of
went
that.
That school. So that school was quite a creative school, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it was. There was quite a lot of great. Michael Kiwanuka come out of there.
Oh, wow.
I feel like there's something about North London. Like, I'm from the outskirts, man. Like, I was raised in, like, Cheserton sort of area, and it was, like, very segregated. Like, you were either, like, you know what I mean, like a rude boy or whatever, or you were, like, a grunger. You know, and it didn't mix. It wasn't very, like, creative and people from different classes mixing and that. But, like, even with, like, the graph lot that I know from North London, like, that every single one of them is from a different background, different culture, and
yeah,
they all came
yeah.
together. And I just feel like it's a proper creative part of the world, man.
It is very creative. I mean, you know, the more cultures that come together, I think the more interesting things that happen, you know.
Yeah, I agree.
All of us came from completely different religions, backgrounds, and, you know, cultural heritages and stuff. But we all spoke the same. And we all dressed like people just do nothing. And obviously, this was the time of Garage and that, innit? So we was like, you know, I was at Eros, Pure Silk, Iron Apple Reunion, in the Rockaware suit and that, you know what I mean?
Nice.
Amazing,
yeah. But with the Clark's Wallabies and the Iceberg sets,
nice big silver chain,
all of the Cubic Zirconia from Wood Green High Road, like massive.
Nice, yeah. My cousin had
massive
them, both ears.
I've still got the holes in both ears, man. Yeah, it was like to sound like an intro to a samurai movie. Like, it was a beautiful time for the empire. You know, it was a beautiful time. It felt like the last throes of subculture. You know, with Camden, you know, Underworld, Kung Fu,
yeah.
And MSM Records,
yeah,
and Deal Real,
yeah.
The old shop, you know, and the new shop, Four Star General, and Black Market and everything. It was like you had to get battle scars, you know, you had to get flyers to know where they were.
Yeah.
You know, this is just before MySpace, and then MySpace came in and things got a bit easier.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like a really amazing time, a very romantic time to get into the arts. You know, it didn't feel like the arts because it was all just, you know, outside ciphering and acting naughty and running around doing dumb young stuff. But it was like at the same time we was like forming record labels, we was like releasing pressing vinyls, you know, releasing cassette mixtapes, then CD mixtapes, and you know, even mini discs in the middle, you know. Doing our own flyers, you know, all of this stuff. So it was like a very kind of entrepreneurial time.
It felt it was all possible as well back then. Like, it's like for us, look from outside looking in, like
I got into, like, I was more into, like, jungle garage and that. And then as I got a bit older, because I rapped, I was like, rah, people in England, what, white boys in England can rap?
Yeah,
like, when
man.
I found out about Skinny Man. But it just felt like it was all happening in North London, man. It felt that was the mecca of it.
The Skinny Man's the godfather, man. He's the godfather. Man. He's the godfather for us, you know.
Farmer G as well.
Farmer, you know. And then literally in the ends, you know, I was getting the 271 on 43 up and down Holloway Road, and I would see them all the time, and they were supportive of us. It was beautiful. We were obviously younger, and you know, Mud Fam were kind of more established, but our crew at the time, Underground Alliance, it was like it was amazing to be kind of under their stewardship and see that. And also, when you say it felt possible, it was looking at like what Low Life Records and Brain Tax were doing, and it was like, wow, now people are actually mastering shit properly, and it's now sounding good, because our mastering and mixing that was so bad. And it weren't even like a Doom Wu-Tang thing, like, this is on purpose. It was just really bad.
You
know what I mean? It was poor. It was poor. Poor show. It was poor work. But that's because we was making it in studios. We just didn't have fucking money or the equipment back then. You couldn't make it on your lap, you know?
Yeah, and I think the build-up of like live as well, because obviously when you bang your shit live in a club and it sounds awful and like... then you kind
it's
of
a whole
like,
different
oh, right.
thing, innit? Yeah.
We need to sort of sort that out. It's painful.
It is painful. It's painful. I must admit, I kind of wrote off the live shows quite a long time ago. I just turned around and was like, I don't enjoy this no more. I'd rather listen to the album on my headphones or whatever.
Yeah.
But back then was amazing. You know what I mean? And again, like when things feel possible, it's like these people were coming over and doing shows, and you know, I'm seeing Common at Jazz Cafe, DMX at Stratford Red, seeing Sticky Fingers in Subterranea, you know, Master P at Subterranea, and just like the illest shows, like I see Fugees, Nas, De La Soul. It was like, it was an amazing time. Big Daddy Kane, all these, like they come over and you were like, wow, these are gods amongst men. I remember seeing J. Rue the Damager in the street outside Scala. And my friend was chatting to him. I was just like, I don't understand. Like, what's he doing in King's Cross?
Yeah.
And why is he not in a limo?
Yeah.
And like, why does he look like us? Like, or just a normal dude? But it was amazing.
Bro, that reminds me. One time, it wasn't that early on. It must have been like 03 or something like that. Going to see Wu-Tang at like Shepherd's Bush, whatever it was called back then. I can't remember. But Shepherd's Bush Empire, fuck knows. But we was all in the queue. And they're basically just walking out of the venue onto the green with a bag of beers and some zoots just to go, like, before their set, just to chill there, innit? And, like, me trying to be all cool and that, like, my mate ran up to them and I just flopped my moment. I just stayed on the other side of the road and nodded to them from the other side of the road.
Yeah.
Trying to be cool. Like, really.
Insecurity playing off as security.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
I don't give a fuck. You're right. Of course you give a fuck. You're paying 40 quid to go in and watch us.
I ain't going to sweat them. I know what it's like. So,
Yeah.
I know how they must feel. So like, I'm just going to leave them. Like, you know what I mean? I'm cool like that. We're on a level.
I'm sort of part of their sort of shit. They know that. It's all good.
You know what I mean? So you nodded to them. It's like, I said, what's up to Deck though? So, you know. Then he had a good show after that. Yes, bro.
So from the rap stuff, do you feel like freestyling or battling or performing helped you like kind of with like improv or the performance aspect of thinking on your toes and stuff like that with acting? Do you felt like that fed into it subconsciously without even knowing kind of thing?
For sure. I mean, in some ways it's a bit of a chicken and egg thing, because it definitely helped it, the fact that I'd already had a performance history.
Mm.
But I think it's the same kind of natural attributes that was that are getting explored. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like there must be a natural confidence to be like running up in HQ Club in fucking 1998 and just jumping on the mic, you know, with some terrible bars. And like, you know, just thinking, yeah, fuck it, I can make a movie, innit?
Yeah.
When like when you ain't even, I could be an actor. When you can't even fucking act, you've never even been to a drama class in your life.
So,
but I think, they definitely help, man. But, you know, I come from a competitive sports background. So that also kind of, it's always kind of been about competition and performance for me. And so I kind of feel like the sports and the hip hop kind of gave me that. But to be honest, I feel like everything that's ever happened to me in my whole life, like, built me up to that point at 27 where it was like, right, give this new thing a go. Yeah. See if you're any good at it. And then it was like, oh my God, everything I've ever been doing. And then that starts feeding into the director. And I'm like, right, it was written, man. Yeah. This is kind of, at a certain point, I have to sit back and go, yeah, this is beautiful, man.
Like, it's all natural and comes from an honest place.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Even since I've been doing stuff, I honestly think the reason why I've been able to kind of climb the ladder quicker than the trajectory maybe should have been is because I don't care. It's not, I'm not making this for, in fact, I care more than anyone. There's no one, I've never been on a set where I felt like there was someone who cared more about the creative more than me.
Yeah.
I don't care about the outcome. I just don't. And I'm not saying that to be like, oh, you know what I mean? Like, no, I really fucking mean it. I don't give a flying fuck. I don't care. It's like, it's life experience. It's creative experience. It's like, if it helps me grow, great. And it's like, if my family loves me, my friends love me, like, I just don't need the adoration of any of this shit. I just don't. And I'm not trying to go to the parties. I'm turning down this, turning down that, turning down that. All I want is the work, you know? So it's like, it's always been from this point of view. The only thing is, with this industry, with acting, I didn't sabotage myself by saying, no, I only want to do, you know, let's say the equivalent would have been, I only want to do hood movies, basically.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah,
I'm a hood
and
actor.
Now full circle, we're back here now going with me saying, I want to do a hood movie.
Yeah.
You know. It's so interesting, man. I said I don't care, but... And I said it like I didn't care then. Mm. What I realized is that I cared so much about what everyone else thought.
Yeah.
I cared so much about the underground that I was handcuffed to underground hip hop.
Yeah.
You know, the Godfathers, you know,
it
was like, no, I can't let Skinny down, man. I can't let them lock down, man. It's, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I was handcuffed to my friends, to my community, to my group and all of that, and to the genre, you know? Whereas now I'm like, now I actually realize no one gives a shit. Yeah, that much. Whenever I get too much inside my own feelings, I just go, just remember, Ed, you're not that important and no one gives a shit about you.
It's so true.
Yeah.
It's so,
you know, because they don't, bruv. They just don't care. They don't care, bruv. They don't. It's not that. None of this is. People just do nothing. BAFTA winning this and that.
Yeah.
Whatever movie you want to pick from mine.
Yeah.
So what, bruv?
Yeah.
People don't care. People don't care. We've got enough stresses going on and it's like, it's yesterday's news. There's like, I'm not being handcuffed to that. If it's going to be like that, then it's like, no, I'm going to take the pride of these projects, you know, the pride that you lot did of what you lot achieved culturally and also as a secondary commercially, you know, incredible achievement. It's like, cool, that should fill you with confidence and happiness that you made people like me
satisfaction.
From that community happen, but then dust that off and keep it moving, man. Mm-hmm. Who gives a shit, bro?
It's true. And also those rules that you're talking about, like, you know, of your peers back then and stuff like that. Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Like, I get that. Cause that's what it was. I mean, even when I first, even me and Asim, when we first had to be Grindr and he was going to be Chabaz on YouTube and that, we was like, yeah, people ain't going to take our rap shit seriously, man. Like, that's the first thing I thought of. Do you know what I'm saying? But you can't live like that now. You're basing those rules off even the people that you wanted to impress back then have changed. Do you know what I mean? It's like, say, as a joke, we always say if an advert comes in or little things, we're like, would Wu-Tang do it though? You know what I'm saying? The answer is probably yes now.
Some of them wouldn't. Yeah, what year are we asking when they would do it?
We're thinking of Wu-Tang 95. Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like,
they sold that album to that fucking scumbag at the 2 mil. Like, they would do it, bro.
They would do that show. You can't keep your rules from when you was fucking 19 years old from someone else. Do you know what I'm saying? Now.
No.
It doesn't
It's
translate.
Good to be in tune with that 19-year-old underground rapper.
Yeah.
Don't always listen to him.
Yeah.
Nah. No, I mean, like, it's really interesting. I'm not sure if we've kind of verbalized it exactly right, but I agree. Like that guy is still inside me. Like, everywhere I go, is still inside me. And it's taken me quite a lot of movies to realize that's actually what they were hiring me for.
Yeah.
They weren't hiring me so I could grow a quiff.
Yeah.
And talk properly in the thing and like to pull my trousers up when I meet them and like think about what I'm wearing. No.
Yeah.
They're actually just hiring me this energy, that all of the energy that's always been here, it's like, be yourself. And it's like, okay, well, what myself is like, all right, then when I go on, when I've got a month where I have to work, I'm only going to pack 5 tracksuits and 3 pairs of Nikes.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? And I'm nice.
Yeah.
Let's go. And even if I, do I, what if I have to go out to dinner? I'm going to wear a tracksuit.
Yeah.
You
know what I mean? But I'm going to be polite and,
You
know, gracious to them and all of this. And it's so it's like, again, not overthinking it.
I've got it.
Mm-hmm.
Keep that same energy, but don't let that energy overrule your decisions. That's pretty sick.
There you go.
Yes. Yeah.
We'll take that.
It took a while.
It took a while. Even as I was trying to explain it before, I was like, the words are coming out, but they don't sound like what you're thinking.
Even the way you said it, I was like, I didn't understand what those words in that order meant.
Yeah.
And then 3 seconds later, I went, no, that's right. That's
boom.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's layered.
It
takes you a while. Do you know what I mean? Yeah.
Message.
Yeah. So, because I was going to ask as well, like, but I think you've kind of covered that, but like, the step from rapping to then being on a set, it's probably kind of similar to us because where you did it with your friends and it was about your world as well, you weren't, apart from obviously it being more stressful and stuff like that, you probably weren't that far out of your comfort zone, I'm assuming.
No, I wasn't at all, to be honest. Ben wrote the role for me, so it kind of was like tailored to my sense of humour and the kind of conversations that we'd have when we were fucked up and that, and, you know, the humour that we shared. And so what that meant is that I had this beautiful introduction, this organic introduction. I had a director as well that I trust with my son, with my life, with my knows my parents, who I know his parents. All of that to say that made everything after that a lot harder.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't know if you felt the same way, but I was like, I didn't have imposter syndrome on ill manners, but the second I stepped on set after that was just like, oh shit.
Yeah.
You know, and
where's Ben?
I'm not allowed to say bruv every other word.
Yeah.
And, you know,
what
I'm
was
not walking
that?
In out of chicken shops spunning zoots and that. Like, I'm like, I don't know this world. You
well,
know?
It's true, isn't it? Yeah, because that basically was your life. So it's like breathing. It's like when stepping on something else. It's like, okay, now this is like a challenge. So what was that? What was the next job after that then? And how did you feel when, you know, around that time?
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I was worried, but again, I was like kind of comfortable. I was made to feel comfortable in that job. Actually, it was called Piggy, movie with Neil Maskell and Paul Anderson, Boise. Mm. And then, I did about 3 or 4 like lower budget movies after that. I remember I went on holiday with Ben, and basically I had an agent by then, and I was in the airport coming home, and my agent said, oh, can you call me? And I was like, you know, and she said, there's 2 jobs that have come in, but the first one, you've got to leave London in 2 days to go to South Africa.
Bruh.
And I was in the airport in France, and I'm not living the jet set life, bruv.
Yeah.
I had not been living. I was working at fucking Caledonian Road Baths, the swimming pool.
Yeah.
You know, I was like coaching swimming, and I was in the ends, bruv. I was at, I've been in Archway Pool and that for years.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know, get someone else to teach the kids while I go and shoot this movie when I did Ill Manners. But now it's like, I'm thinking, hang on a minute, this is so much. Like, South Africa, I've never been to Africa in my life.
Yeah.
You know, this is a whole new movie. I've got to start this thing. I'm going to meet these people in 2 days. At that point, it was really difficult for me to learn lines, you know?
Yeah.
It was intimidating, man. But it was exciting. And I've always been this, like, had this like blind confidence. I was like, fuck it, I'm doing it, man. Fuck that. I just went and did it.
Yeah.
It was mad. It was so scary. It was so intimidating. I was so winging it, man. I just remember turning up on the first day at the hotel, and straight away there was like, oh, this is like, there's a dinner for the cast. And you turn up and there's like a table of 8 people.
Yeah.
And I'm good at like faking confidence and just like going with the wave, but I was shitting it. And I remember Leo Gregory. If you know Leo Gregory from like Football Facts, I don't know if he's in Football Facts, but he's in loads of them Cockney things. He's a wicked actor. And love if any come up and he's like, bruv, I'm so fucking glad you're here. We're going to get through this, the two of us. Don't worry.
Sick.
Like, you know, I was like, oh, there's someone here from ENDS.
Yeah.
And I'm a grafter and I work really hard, but like, I had so much catching up to do, man. I had so much catching up to do. I really didn't, you know, natural talent and that, it really just doesn't go that far, man. on a film set, you know, it's technical, man.
Yeah, only takes you know? So far, yeah.
Yeah, so it took, so I was just like, went a bit psycho with learning and still didn't have enough money for like acting coaches and dialect coaches. So it was kind of just like doing what I could.
Is it just because you're getting paid all right, so you can just get bring your own acting coach and dialect coach kind of thing? It's not included in the package.
Yeah, it's not part
no,
of the
no, well, it can be. This is all like negotiable, basically.
Okay. Yeah.
So like, if I get a role where it's going to be in an American accent and it's a big job, like let's say Midway or something, then I'll say to my lawyer when we're negotiating, I'll say, oh, I'll get an acting coach.
Chatting. Yeah.
Acting. Accent.
Accent, yeah.
The dialect coach.
Mm-hmm.
I'll put that in. But then if I'm doing something like Maleficent, yeah, which I don't need an accent coach, but I needed a personal fucking trainer.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, slap that in because I need
KT
that.
In. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But for Midway and all these other ones, I don't need it. I don't want it, you know? So it's like basically just tailoring it to the needs. I've never asked for nothing that wasn't necessary.
Topless the whole time as well.
Bro, listen to this.
Stress me out.
Bro, listen to this.
I put my t-shirt on now.
No, man. I turned up, yeah? They said I would come to Pinewood for costume fitting and to take some pictures to meet people. This is months before it started. I mean, like, at least...
Yeah. Oh, getting a nice suit.
Yeah, 8 weeks or whatever. I'm like, okay, wicked. Like, you know, this is well exciting. You know, Pinewood and just going Disney.
Yeah.
I was so gassed. Oh, I was so gassed. So happy. Grinning teeth. And I was like that the whole job. It was such a wonderful experience.
That's it.
But basically, I turned up at this costume thing and they sent me into the little tent. And there was a hanger with a dressing gown, some sliders, not my 108.9 sliders that I've got. Should have brought them in. Yeah. They get repped on every film set, trust me.
Sick.
All around the world they've been. Although they're a size too big for me, which always pisses me off. But that's how much I'll rep you.
We'll get into more.
You know, no. It's all good. So it was a dressing gown, sliders.
Yeah.
And I swear, like, skin coloured, like naked pants.
Ah, bro, I don't know how.
and this is in like a COVID testing style, before COVID, but like a big white tent.
Yeah.
Pinewood in a car park. This ain't the glamour life. I'm not in the Four Seasons.
Yeah,
wherever. So I'm like in a tent putting this on and I'm like, my little pot belly, and I'm like, oh, fuck. And then they're taking pictures and I'm like, how come you're taking pictures? Like, well, you know, and they're like, oh, like, didn't they tell you, like, you're not going to be wearing much clothes? Like, obviously you won't be like this, but we'll just do it like this so we can design your costume and all that. Okay, cool. So just 1 second. You know, come, and I'm like, straight on the phone to my agent. I was like, yeah, I need a personal trainer.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah.
Like, I need to start training 6 days a week.
I'm jogging
now.
Back.
Yeah. I'm jogging back from Pinewood to Hackney.
Yeah.
On the A406. You know what I mean? I'm going M25 just to get more miles in.
Yeah.
And from that moment, I was driven by fear.
Yeah.
By fear of, you know, by that feeling of being exposed, of standing there thinking, you're supposed to be this fucking creature in this big Disney thing. I was like, nah. So luckily I love that shit. Yeah. So it was just like, also there's a perverse side of me that just tricks myself. I was like, oh, wicked. Well, I'm going to go nuts then. I'm going to start training hard. So it was like Pilates, Muay Thai, weights, the works. It was nuts.
You know what I want to ask as well, like, and I know, like, obviously a lot of your roles were always like a little bit physical, or whatever. But then going into roles like in Deadpool or whatever, where it's just some like next level physical shit, is it a massive jump or is it literally just getting fit and sort of doing what they tell you sort of thing? You know what I mean?
If I stop to think about it, it's a massive jump.
Yeah.
But it is just getting, once you don't stop and think about it, it is put the fucking work in.
Yeah,
it's like accents. It's like when you start, you're like unbelievable, like unbelievably disrespectful, cultural appropriational accents. You know, it's like, and you think, hang on a minute, I've signed up to a whole fucking movie. It's like, I'm going to mug off myself and the whole nation.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a jump, but it's a jump that I love.
Yeah.
You know, and anyone that knows me knows that I love training. So I've been training, you know what I mean? So it's just kind of an opportunity to, yeah. And plus, actually, I was a coach. Yeah. So I saw pupils firsthand. Mm. I saw good learners, bad learners, good students, bad students. Also, I had kids that I took from 6 years old up to like national level swimmers and stuff. Mm. Like by the time they hit 15, you know, some of them I was teaching for 15 years or whatever. So, you know, I could see how much people could change and improve when they applied themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds mad, but yeah, I was kind of inspired by all of my old swimmers and that. I was like, no, if Martin and Isabella can do it, then I can do it. And I just need to be like them and concentrate like a 10-year-old girl in Cali Pool.
Yeah, like we all do sometimes.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a life lesson right there.
So, that's how I got ready for Deadpool. Yeah, that's
right. Yeah, yeah.
Next question.
Yeah. Is that... So you're left with, like, I guess it's like, yeah, like with all these different films and different roles, you're left with different skills, like whether it's like learning an accent or whatever. But like with Deadpool, is it just like mad martial arts fight sequences and shit? Is it just like loads of choreography and shit?
Yeah, we spent months doing that. Phil Silvera was the stunt coordinator for that amazing human
being.
Must
be so fun though, man.
So fun, man. I found a video the other day of me practicing, and we had this big like warehouse hangout with all the mats and all the cardboard boxes, and you know, and so I'd have my axes at home, so I'd like practice at home, practice my Kali Eskrima, like Filipino knife and stick fighting drills that I'd been given.
Sick.
And
yeah,
then
sounds sick.
And then I'd go to work, right? But what I'd do is I'd get in the lift to go to work, and this is like furnished apartments in Vancouver, and so the only people to say is people like me, is like, you know, people in transit that's working. It was shooting the BFG movie there.
Oh, wow.
Right? And the little girl, one of the little girls in it was my next door neighbor with her mum. And then the Women's World Cup was on at the time. So the Canadian women's football team was there as well. So but I would get in the lift and I'd forget I had my axes and that, but I'm wearing my PE kit. Yeah. And people were like, what the fuck is that? Or like, it was a great, it was so funny, man.
Yeah.
It was so funny, but it was just great. Like, again, it was like, if you stop on the first day and think what you're going to have to do at the end of it, then you'll just think, I can't do this.
Mm.
And you just have a mental breakdown.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, you just concentrate, like, just do it one step at a time. And the fight scenes in that, you know, yeah, we picked up awards for that, me and Ryan, you know, and this is the second fight. I'm so proud of that. You know what I mean? 6-minute fight scene, that last one, man.
Bro,
and yeah, legendary shit. But it's like legendary shit because it took me 4 months of practice.
Yeah.
You know, that means the world. Whereas like when you see the fight sequences, the small combat sequences in things like Alita, which is a movie I love dearly, one of my favorite.
I enjoyed that.
Yeah, I thought it was really great. But, you know, it was exactly what it should have been.
Mm.
But the fight sequences, that's digital. I didn't do any of that.
Yeah, right.
Oh, really?
So when I see that, I'm like, yeah, it's cool.
Yeah,
it's cool.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
All that cool moves and that, but he's a cyborg and no human can move as how they wanted him to move.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's definitely like work put in equals reward.
For sure. And those are the moments where like, obviously it's amazing watching you like in all these amazing roles and you being a brilliant actor. And being from here, that's always really surreal and inspiring.
Yeah.
But seeing you in something like that, it's like, wow, because you have to understand all the physicalities behind it, as well as the acting, as well as the remembering the light, as well as everything you usually do. And that on top of it, it's just mad, man. But like, yeah, respect.
You know, that man. That movie, like, people in London, they always say, like, people still talk about ill manners. Even around the world, people still talk about ill manners, which I'm always like, wow. But certain heads, like, you know, our generation, like, ill manners, that was the one, brother. You know, that what that meant to them.
Yeah, because that was part of our upbringing as well, that shit. You know what I mean?
Culture. It was, man. It was. Everything else I've ever done, like, you know, people are like, oh, I like that. I might like that. Or if you mention it, they might like it. But Deadpool, the amount of people that from London and that, they're like, nah, bro. When I heard you and I saw you, I was like, what, from the ends? And you're in a movie? And you're doing it? I was like, nah.
Right.
Or they was like, oh, I remember you from UK. But when I saw you, that was so inspiring.
Yeah.
So for me, that was like, that was a really positive thing. I don't try to be or even want to necessarily be like a figure of inspiration, or I don't want what comes with it. But I do want to inspire, man. I do want to inspire people.
I think it lets people know that there's like one of us, in quotation marks, who's doing it, and it's possible. Like,
and things are possible, exactly. But with hard work,
which we didn't think it was.
Yeah. Like, you feel proud. Like, when I saw you in Deadpool, I felt proud.
100,
like, I was like, fucking hell, that's sick.
Exactly,
like,
that's the reaction. Fucking hell.
Sick.
He's killing it. Look where he is. Look what he's doing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so nice, man. Like, not for an ego power, but for, man. For the fact that it was like when Steve said, oh, we should write this in script. And you're like, what do you mean?
Yeah.
People don't even write scripts.
Yeah.
And me like, what do you mean you want me to be in a movie? We're not in movies. We don't make movies.
Yeah.
People like us don't make movies.
Yeah.
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 You know, so now they see Deadpool and they don't say that.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Okay. I could be in fucking Marvel movies then.
Yeah.
But it's possible.
Yeah. For
doesn't mean it's going to happen, but it's possible. That's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. For real, man.
Message.
Yeah, man. Anyway, that's a sick little coming towards the end of the show as well. So it's a perfect little. Do you know what I mean? 360.
Full circle, baby.
Yeah, yeah.
The three questions.
Well, listen, we're coming to one of the last parts of the show, which I think it's why everyone listens to it, really. It's the part where you ask us three questions.
No way.
Yeah.
Oh, you should have told me. I would have fucking thought of some good ones.
Nah, I like it on the spot, man.
Oh, you know what? I would love to interview you lot, man. But you should have told me because I could have thought of something. I know I'm going to be at home. I'm going to text you later. I'm going to be like, man, what was it like when you first did this? All right. Actually, there's one question I'd like to ask, right? My short film, Little River Run, my DP was Cy Bell.
Oh, yeah.
And my first AD is John Midland.
Wow. Oh, yeah. Bruv, both G's. Oh, that's
so
amazing.
So they did season one and two or just one?
So Sia did one and two. And John, I think, did the first ADs changed.
Three.
Yeah.
Right.
John's amazing, man. He's a G. Proper into hip-hop. I mean, Sia's as well, obviously.
Yeah.
Incredible. But I just remember about John, he was proper into hip-hop and shit as well. And we were talking about it. He even knew some writers and that. Like, he's a proper
G. So then my question is, have you got any dirt on them or anything embarrassing or anything that...
I'm trying to think. John used to... Nothing embarrassing for John, but he used to bring one of his mateys down from Brighton just to sit on set sometimes. And he was proper like... You know, you get like the best mate who's still... He's still on shit, basically, isn't it?
Still a bit wild.
Yeah. He was about John's age, but he's still going to the hip hop clubs. He's just there, like, well, should we play his little zoot and that? Like, they're not real zoots, man. Like, we're working.
He came up with a phrase which we use today with extras, where he would say he'd tap them on the shoulder and go, toast them to the toasting people. So like, if we have people in our green room that we don't really want there, we'll say to our tour manager. Toast them.
I beg you, toast them. He's fucking...
Just get rid of them.
Who's that bro? He's just drinking all the fucking rum. We don't even know him. Toast him. That's from John. You might have a bit where, like, you know, like, you've got, like, you know this, innit? Like, club scenes, they're quite hard to do, aren't they? Like, to look natural and that. And you might have some bros. You know, he's like, everyone just dance naturally and you got one bread and some mad body popping or whatever. You're like...
Robot.
That's... What's he doing, man? That bro's just... You know, like, the bros that are trying to, like, have their moment. And he's like, all right, cool. He goes to his little person where he's like, toast him. So he just goes and toasts him. Basically, tap him on the shoulder and they got to leave.
Yeah. That, you know what that sounds like, John? He is everything that a first AD needs to be and genuinely one of the best first ADs I've ever worked with. And that says a lot because I work with some really good ones. But he is like top two. You know, he's amazing. All right, then. So the second question is, what was you bunning in those zoots then?
Oh, yeah. That's... It's butters, man. It tastes like bonfire.
Oh, it's horrible.
Yeah,
proper. Is it butter. That stuff, the classic film smoke?
Yeah,
stuff?
Yeah.
What's it like?
It tastes like shit, innit?
Honey rose.
Yeah. Some fucking legal... horrible.
Yeah, like you get like a sore throat bit and that.
How can we put a man on the moon, but we can't make fucking rolling tobacco?
We can't use CBD weed that doesn't get you high, but we're always saying get CBD weed.
Isn't it? Like, that's legal as well. Yeah.
Because then it'll burn properly as well. Because it's a problem when things don't look right.
So true. Yeah, and then you're just sucking away at it and it's sidewinding and it's not burning. Yeah. Like there's bare times where we'd have like a talking head where I'm meant to be like delivering my lines, but I'm fucking focusing on the fact that I know this is, the thing's not fucking sparked up. You know, and it's nothing worse in a film when someone takes a toke and it's not lit.
Yeah.
And they're pretending to take a toke.
And
you know
also
what I mean?
As well, it's just like the you want us to want to blaze it. And then when they're like, okay guys, get the spliff bag. It's basically a bag of pre-rolls. And then we all go, oh fuck's sake.
Yeah. Even so, though we want, like, we writ that in the day. You're like, well, poor Steve's doing that in a bong and shit or getting blowback.
Yeah.
All right, third question.
Yeah.
Did you like, used to go to Iron Apple back in the day?
Nah, so basically, I feel like I was maybe too young. Well, I'm 35, though. How old are you?
37.
Okay, so maybe I was just too young and I was too... When I first started raving as well, I was too young to even get in raves. So I'd be going, I was like a drum and bass squat party don.
Yes.
So I used to go around. That was my thing, innit? For years.
You used to go to Ali Pally?
No, that's what I mean. I never
the
really
jungle
got
raves
to...
up there were nuts.
Yeah, hard. I missed all that, man. I used to go, it was like around here really, back then, but it was like an alien world for me, innit? Like Hackney, Camden, Stratford, all these places that were like alien worlds to me and all the warehouses there. You know, like the graph, like a lot of graphers.
Yeah, yeah.
That sort of lifestyle, man.
Tottenham like, and all that.
Yeah, so that was the sort of life. But never got to go to Iron Apple, man. I think...
The irony that now there'll be loads of people in Iron Apple dressed up as you lot from the fucking series.
I know.
And seriously as well, not even as a fucking parody.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
TNs. Yeah. Just pure TNs. Yeah. I never went Iron Apple. I think because Steve... The first sort of lads holiday, we went to Zante instead because Steve wasn't really into sort of garage as much as me and a few other people. And Zante felt like, you know, it had like, it was playing Archer.
Anti up and all of that.
It was more that vibe. Yeah. Anti up, Usher.
Yeah.
A bit of everybody in the club getting tips was the vibe.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I was longing for Pulse X. I was longing for it.
Yeah.
that was legendary time. The first...
Did you go there in the heyday, like when Heartless and that was going out?
That's what I mean, man. I mean, Black and White Club is my favourite club in the world. It's the hip-hop club that's out there.
Yeah.
Black and White Club is amazing. Castle Club. It was amazing. But then all of them... Those times, like when you say Zante, I remember like, Falaraki and Tenerife.
Yeah, and... there's so many options, man. Now I feel like it goes Ibiza. Like,
divide.
But support Iron Appa.
Well, I don't even know if Iron Appa's still... Is it still a thing?
I think... Probably. Yeah, but like, even back in like 2009, which is years after, you know what I mean, the heyday, I remember... No, 2008, I think. I remember, Hugo, remember we used to work in a call centre, me and Dan.
Yeah.
And I remember Dan going out to Iron Apple.
Nice.
But he was just a hip hop head by then, and he went to that club you mentioned and that.
Black and White.
There's one in
Felton as well called Black
Felton
and White.
But not linked up.
Nothing to do with it. But I think people that went there were like, fucking hell, they got Black and White out here as well.
It was cold.
Yeah, man.
It was cold. Oh, man. This is real nice though, boys, man. I appreciate you lot. And, you know, we won't get too sycophantic or whatever, but you lot are an inspiration to me. And, you know, I appreciate what you've done for my community and culture. And, you know, the nuance of representation is such that everyone wants to be represented. And I never felt represented until you lot come along. So
thank you,
and
man.
Love.
Thank you, bro. And
likewise for us, Matt. Yeah. Like, we just want to be you when we grow up.
Yeah.
That's real.
Yeah.
Well, if you work as hard as a 10-year-old in Cali football,
I'm going swimming lessons. As soon as lockdown starts, I'm going swimming lessons.
Well, boy, if I don't get a job soon, I might have to be a swimming teacher again. You know what I mean? So I might be around for lessons.
Do you know what? I always used to say that as well, because I used to work at a call centre. And after every series, I go, probably back to the call centre for me then if nothing pops off. So it's always good to have that on the back burner, isn't it?
Yeah.
Swimming.
Well, for the first 4 years, I always said, like, nah. Truth is, like, I'll just go back to work. I don't need none of this if it doesn't pop off.
Yeah.
And then when it popped off, I thought to myself, I can't say that anymore.
This is too sick. I
want to keep doing this shit. This is wicked.
Yeah. Also, another question we ask all our guests, which is very important. Mm-hmm. And I think this this really describes what type of person you are as well. What's your favourite sandwich?
Well, I got an automatic response to that.
Perfect.
But the fact that you said it shows what type of person you are.
Okay, one sec.
Makes me worried.
Okay, one sec then, one sec. You got a top three then.
Right, well, straight up, egg and bacon.
Yep, nice.
Nice.
Straight up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is the combo, man. A bit of ketch.
Yeah.
A butter on both sides.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just keep it simple. Like, that runny, is actually my flex.
Runny egg, crispy bacon?
Yeah, not too crispy, though. Not as crispy as my missus likes to be.
Yeah, okay, okay.
But, yeah, I mean, other sandwiches, like, I don't know if I could say, like, there's a pork quesadilla. Does that count?
Yeah, bruv, yeah. Handhelds count. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And also, I realised I said, like, bacon and pork.
Yeah, you're
and
very
my favourite
haram.
Animal is... Yeah, but my favourite animal is pig, bro. What's going on there?
It's that's some self-destruction shit right there.
Yeah, I need to call the therapist, bro.
Yeah. Number three?
Number three, I'll go for the old classic, being the old English boy that I am. I have to say the old cheese and pickle, bruv.
Oh, yeah, that's nice. A classic. Yeah,
love
yeah,
a cheese and pickle, bruv. Yeah, love yeah. a cheese Same. And pickle.
All right, listen. Last question now. Are you our new best mate?
Well, I hope you guys are my new best mate, but yeah. You've got to tell me if I'm your new best mate.
100%, man. You're a brother. Yeah. Nice. Yeah.
Come on now.
Big ups, brother. Yeah.
Love.
This is the outro. See you later. And good luck. Stay lucky, boy. Stay lucky, boy.
Oh, ho, and it's not even Christmas. How you feeling?
After that, mate, I feel ecstatic.
I am ready to do a backflip.
I'm ready to go kickboxing and get a role in Mandalorian.
But listen, Ed, what a guy.
What an absolute guy. What
a
gentleman.
A jawline sent from space.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jawline sent from space to make me feel like my face is even fatter on screen.
Even rounder. Yeah.
Even rounder and redder. Yeah. Thanks, Ed. Thanks for that. you can
never
tell
blushed
excitement
in his
the room.
Life.
Yeah, of course not, because he's used to the compliments. We can't believe it when we've been complimented.
Yeah, I think they're lying.
Yeah, well, you do. I feel like okay, brilliant. Finally,
that's what I thought
I've
my
been
whole
waiting
life.
For this compliment. Yeah, you fucking moron. And that's what I say to people when they compliment me.
I do look skinny off. And I am attractive. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now, do you fancy me or not? No, I was just saying. I've seen people do nothing. You're all right. Fucking hell! Don't talk to me then.
Compliment.
Keep going. Back it up with another one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go on. I'll take it.
You know, if you were brilliant, I'd compliment you.
Yeah.
You're not. So
yeah, yeah.
That's not my
fault.
No,
that's that's fair.
Yeah. No, I'm joking. I'm very secure. Don't need a compliment. And love you all. You're all brilliant. Okay.
And that was Ed Skrine.
Yeah. And that was Ed Skrine. I mean, listen. The back catalogue speaks for itself.
Yeah.
I can't really say, oh, look here to watch and look at, you know, it's Ed Skrine. So, yeah. You know, check out Deadpool if you ain't seen that. Amazing. Check out, obviously, Ill Manners.
Just go on his IMDb.
And check out what he's done and watch
he's done
it.
So much
right?
stuff.
Yeah, you can even find his old rap shit as well.
If you understand
what that's all about, you know?
Come on.
So, come on. See you lot in a bit, yeah?
See you fannies in a bit. Well, not fannies.
We got to now anyway.
Probably have an early night, to be honest.
If you want, we could play some online poker with Zoom on.
No, I'm going straight to bed.
Straight to bed.
Yeah.
Cool. Just leave Zoom on and I'll watch you sleep.
I don't sleep in this room, but...
I'll
leave it on.
Leave it on.
Yeah.
And then come back in the morning.
Yeah.
And if I hear anything going on in your house, I'll text you.
Thank you.
All right.
Yeah.
See you later.
Appreciate that. Cheers, man. Bye.
Nice one. Bye. Oh, yeah. Also, we forgot to say that you lot must like and subscribe as well, apparently.
Yeah, yeah. Just click on it. It's real easy.
Lift your finger, drop it when you see the like or subscribe it. Done. All right?
Done.
Yeah. Also, follow us on Instagram and our new Twitch account, because we'll be doing live episodes on Twitch every now and then. So keep an eye out.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them are the Chatting Shit Podcast. That's the Chatting Shit Podcast. All right? So follow us on both of them. And also, if you've got any questions, anything you want us to talk about, hit us up on the email. That's chattingshit1@gmail.com. Nice one.
Sweet.
Yeah?
Yeah.
See you later.
See ya.
Hey, yo! Will everyone shut the fuck up? I want to give a crazy, stupid, dope fly shout out to everyone involved in this podcast.
Nah, fuck that. Who's the brain that produces this show, man?
Man like Rupert Magendi.
And who's the audio editor?
James Torrance, check
it. House. Who's the video editor?
Ha ha, James Lord.
And who does all the illustrations?
It's Alison the Ink.
Mad on the visuals, bruh.
Shout out all the posse down at Acast Laboratory.
hip hop, hip hops. Am I right, hustler?
You're not wrong, Playboy Valentino.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.